Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to Financial Survival, and I'm Melody Cederstrom. My co-host today is Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Hello, Dave.
Happy Monday, Melody.
Happy Monday, November 25th, Monday, 2019. Everyone is getting ready for their big Thanksgiving Day holiday, and we haven't produced a schedule yet as far as radio programs and hours here at Discount Gold and Silver. We're kind of open along the lines of buyers and wholesalers and markets and so forth, so we'll let you know about that at the end of the program today, before the end of the program. So, hectic day for a Monday. There's lots of things going on, and unfortunately, it's all in the paper markets, and so we had some pressure in gold today, 1455, down 640. And I got to turn down. There we go. Silver was down 9 pennies today at 1697. Platinum was up $7 at 900, and palladium just continues to roar, up another 26 at 1805. The USDX today was up another 5 cents at 98.31. Crude oil was up 26 cents at 58.03. And the paper markets today were once again giddy. And again, I mean, this isn't new, ladies and gentlemen, heading into the holiday, higher paper market prices, lower gold prices. They don't want anyone sitting around the turkey dinner table talking about gold. That's the last thing they want you to talk about. And but they do want you to talk about your stocks. And the Dow was up 178 points at 28,053. The NASDAQ was up 112 at 86.32. The S&P was up 23 at 3,133. 10-year yield 1.76%, down 0.1. And all the Asian markets and European markets were strong. Hong Kong, of course, so we'll talk about why that was up a little over 1.5%. I guess all the world's problems have just gone away. Of course, they'll be gone for this week anyway, as we head into our Thanksgiving Day holiday. So, you know, it does kind of seem like a busy Thanksgiving week when it comes to various reports and things that are coming out. I don't know if anybody's going to be paying any attention to any of them, and that's probably why they're releasing all of them. Let's release these when no one's paying attention. But you write about that in today's newsletter today, Dave.
Yes, it's true. It is a week of Thanksgiving, Melody, and investors' thoughts are about to turn to holiday shopping, consumer sentiment, the possible year-end Santa rally in the stock and precious metal markets. In fact, some analysts think they all could be pretty good this year. Now, although Black Friday has probably lost some of its muster, some of its claim to fame as the official launch of holiday shopping, it could still provide a glimpse of how much consumers are going to spend the rest of the year and how much of that will be bought online from Amazon. The National Retail Federation says they see sales growing by about 4% during the holiday shopping season, enough, they say, to keep the economy rolling along. And we know it's been a bumpy ride. If, let's see, J.P. Morgan analysts say they expect sales to be up even more during the holidays, 4.9%. That's more than double last year when retail sales gained a paltry 1.9%. And shoppers were discouraged by the major sell-off in the equity markets.
Yeah, you know what? These J.P. Morgan analysts, they need to get together and at least say the same thing, but that's all part of the little propaganda. I mean, one head is speaking about, you know, gloom and doom, and the other one is speaking about, oh, man, a 5% increase, more than double from last year for retail sales. Of course they're going to say that. I mean, so they really do need to get together and come up with the same stories that they release, but hey, that's what it's all about. And so tell us about, what do they expect for the paper markets and the precious metals, Dave?
Well, for the stock market, it inexplicably continues to reach for new highs. And some analysts say that, you know, that shouldn't change as the calendar transitions well into a seasonally strong time of year for stocks. Cayman Wills, who heads up the global equities at J.P. Morgan Private Bank, says she's looking for a better economy with no lingering concern about a recession next year. Say what? Come on, Cayman. Maybe you need a trip to the Cayman Islands. As a result, she began adding to industrials in September and magically now expects manufacturing to turn around. She said if ISM manufacturing data shows improvement next week, as she expects, industrial stocks should go even higher. Meanwhile, gold and silver continued their extended climb up and down, down than up the last 2 weeks, the climb up the precious metal beanstalk does continue nevertheless. Now, gold's been down over the past month by about $27, or 1.8%, and silver's down 83 cents, or 4.7%. But since a year ago, remember, both metals are well up, both just shy of 20%. We have high confidence that the current correction will turn around and gold and silver will soon resume their ascent through the clouds, Melody.
So what all is going to be going on this week?
Well, our buddy Jerome Powell, scheduled to speak at the Greater Providence, Rhode Island Chamber of Commerce annual dinner tonight. Last time we heard from him is when he delivered congressional testimony on the economic outlook just last week. Powell told Congress's Joint Economic Committee that the Fed's unlikely to further adjust interest rates anytime soon as long as the economy remains on its current path. And I truly wonder if anyone knows just what that path is. Now, in the bond market, Treasury auctions $113 billion this week in 2-year, 5-year, and 7-year notes today, tomorrow, and Wednesday, respectively. Investors are also closely watching for signs of whether Trump signs the Hong Kong bill. Last week, as we reported, both chambers of Congress passed a pro-Hong Kong human rights bill, I should say pro-democracy human rights bill, by near unanimous margins. That's amid the state's crackdown on protests. Now, you know, the bill landed on the president's desk over the weekend. Investors will monitor any signal from the White House as to whether the president will sign the bill or not. His signature, which I personally believe is forthcoming, would anger China at a sensitive time when negotiators are trying to work out a potential phase one trade deal. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute.
You know, I just want to go back and make a comment about whether the retail, what they were expecting, the big increases online and so forth. Every year, and this will be in the newsletter too, every year they have the Christmas price index, you know, the 12 days of Christmas, a partridge and a pear tree, and they go through everything and they list the prices and it shows the inflation and so forth and whatnot. And we have that posted in there. But the thing I caught my attention, Dave, is everybody says, oh, I can find it much cheaper online. I can find it much cheaper online. What's interesting is the PNC that produces this, and I guess they've been doing it since, I think 1984 or something like that. It calculates the cost of the 12 days of Christmas gifts purchased on the internet, as the internet prices tend to be higher.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody says, oh, well, yeah, I save so much money going on the internet. And it really isn't.
I mean, if that's based on personal research, fine. But if it's more or solely a gut feeling, I think your wallet could be in for a big surprise.
Yeah, I mean, it shows that the cost of the 12 days of Christmas, it would to buy online would be $3,200, yeah, almost $3,300 more.
Really?
Yes.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. So it's, you know, again, it just kind of, there's just so much the numbers are just
confusing.
Because when you look at the taxes that they now have to charge, they've got 3 years, ladies and gentlemen, to start charging you sales tax. And with the shipping, Most everyone now charges shipping on that. It really adds up. So it's going to be interesting, Dave, to see if these retail stores, the brick and mortar stores, played it right. They should be able to capitalize on some of this. And I mean, they certainly still won't have a, if they do it in response to their national online selling and so forth, but we'll see if anyone out there is clever enough to do it. But anyway, back to what you were writing about the tomorrow, Tuesday, you write that the Philadelphia's Fed's monthly manufacturing index is going to be released. So will the S&P Case-Shiller home price index, the home prices, new home sales, and consumer confidence, all that is going to be released tomorrow?
And more. I mean, the Treasury is also going to auction the five-year notes that I alluded to a moment ago, and Fed Governor Lyle Brainard is going to talk about the Fed's review of monetary policy strategy at the New York Association for Business Economics. And then on Wednesday, we got monthly reports on initial jobless claims, durable goods, third quarter real GDP. They come, and personal income and pending home sales, too. Treasury will auction seven-year notes at 1 p.m., one of the newer maturities. And an hour later, the Fed's going to release its infamous Beige Book report on current economic conditions. And it's October 16th, this blue Beige Book statement served as the foundation for the Fed's rate cut at the end of the month.
Well, you know, and it's always kind of interesting. I mean, that's a lot of reports for this week. And I don't know if they're jamming them all in this week because do they usually – I don't remember them all coming in one week.
Yeah, there might be one. I can't recall which one. I think most of them are on schedule. There was one that was still catching up from the government shutdown earlier in the year, and there's still some glitches apparently in reporting for that report. And I just forget which one it is. But by and large, it's a lot of information coming out in a shortened week.
Has there been any more? I haven't seen any more confirmation on the phase one. See, I believe they already have a deal, and I just think they're waiting to release it at the proper time. But it's just me.
I know
it's an election year, ladies and gentlemen. This election year isn't any different, or next year isn't. It's not any different than any other year. But
you and I disagree on that one. I do believe they did have a phase one deal, but then both sides started talking publicly, and I think it backed the other side into a corner. But the bottom line, as you know, the program was going to air, there isn't a phase one trade deal so far as we know. Yale University professor Stephen Roach says the on-again, off-again phase one is hollow, flawed, and even ridiculous. Those are his words. He says it's politically expedient, and he thinks the president's feeling a lot of political pressure for other reasons here at home, but it's very flawed in that it focuses on a bilateral fix, operating on the U.S. bilateral deficit to address America's multilateral trade imbalances with 102 countries.
Wow. So everyone is eagerly waiting for that signature. And
indeed, our announcement about what country, what city they may end up signing this phase one deal. Hmm. Up, down, all around, Melody. It's crazy time.
What about my buddy Larry Kudlow? What's he saying about it?
Larry, well, last week, the end of last week, he said that the U.S. and China were getting close to a deal. Mm. Although he didn't give any details on that timeline, U.S. Chamber of Commerce representatives said negotiators may not be able to finalize a deal before the new tariffs scheduled to kick in on December 15th take effect. That seems to be growing more and more likely, but that might be a good reason for I honestly think, though, that Trump right now wants those that new level of tariffs to kick in. I think to the extent a deal can be put together next year, I think there's hope among his campaign, and this is purely speculation on my part that you know, the timing is better for this deal, whether it's in, you know, one phase or two or three or four, to get inked with the elections forefront in voters' minds.
That's what I think. I think the phase one is just going to be a very minor one, you know, get some money funneling to the farmers and so forth, some agriculture, and, you know, but any of the big, you know, any of the big stuff, you know, is going to come to a later.
Yeah. Yeah. It, who knows? Who knows? We see more and more people just scratching their heads and throwing their hands up about this. On Monday, there's positive talk about an imminent signing. Next day, paper markets go crazy.
Yeah.
And then later that day, there's a quote coming from somewhere saying, hold on, we're just not so sure about this. Next day, market tanks. And it's just been like that now for since October, anyway. It's earlier last month when word first came of a possible phase one. It's it is frustrating for everyday Americans. And in some ways, actually, though, it's probably more frustrating for those of us who follow it closely like we do, because you know, I'm beginning to think our credibility starts to get impacted.
No, I don't think so at all. But, I mean, because most people out there aren't following the news. I mean, they tune into their favorite, you know, this favorite station, and many of it might be local, just local news and so forth. And I don't think very many of them, I mean, it showed through the impeachment inquiries last week that nobody was really paying attention, not to the degree that you'd think. But yeah. It's, I think it all comes down, they're being told it's a great economy and it's enough to keep them happy. It's enough to keep everyone happy. As long as you're, you know, as long as you're told you're pretty, you are. I guess. I don't know if that's any, that's relative or not.
I think it's right on. It's right on. I mean, we got word of these impending mergers, big buck mergers, that we may get to later on in the program if we have time. Our buddy Warren Buffett is a very critical about his buddy Charles Schwab's impending purchase of TD Ameritrade, using company stock to buy that purchase.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, we're heading into break. We'll be right back. Thank you for joining us. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. You can listen to these programs live by going to the bar at the top or the archives, and, of course, our newsletter that we were talking about in the first segment of the program. It's a little shortened one this week with Dave's article and, of course, the Partridge in a Pear Tree, the 12 Days of Christmas annual index that tells you how much it costs. And, again, they've been doing it. If you bought that whole index, $38,993.59. That is the calculated 2019 price tag for the PNC Christmas Price Index.
Melody, I know you must be in the holiday spirit. I'm not sure you realize it, but you just told listeners that they could listen to the show by going to the bar.
So. To the red bar at the top of the web.
The red bar, okay. On the
web red page. Bar okay. At the top of the page at the website.
I missed that part. Okay, my apologies.
Well, they could probably go to the bar and listen there too. They can listen to it on their phones and there so forth. Go. So whatever suits their fancy, but they need to give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. China's looking to purchase some, they're looking to purchase a record sale of sovereign bonds in dollars. $6 billion offering. And the Ministry of Finance is considering maturities of 3 years, 5, 10, and 20. And, of course, this marks the third straight year for China to issue dollar debt and underscores the nation's continued interest in building out an offshore market where its companies and local authorities can tap funding. So how will this affect the dollar, Dave?
Well, I don't think it's going to weaken it. I guess that remains to be seen. I do find it interesting, given our story last week that we talked about, that is other nations, particularly China's desire to look for alternatives to the U.S. dollar as a reserve currency. Many countries have been talking about that now for a few years. And, this seems, I have to think about it a little bit, but on the surface, it appears to sort of oppose or be in opposition to that desire. But, this is going to start soon. It starts tomorrow, I believe. Mm. And, it's going to double the size that they issued last year, triple the amount of 2017. That's when China resumed issuing sovereign dollar debt for the first time since 2004.
Trade agreement? Do you think it's part of the trade agreement?
Well, that's interesting. That's an interesting thought. I didn't think about that, but it's not out of the question. It isn't, and it can't be. But I guess unless, if this were part of an agreement at the very senior levels, not necessarily between Trump and Xi, but perhaps Lighthizer and the foreign minister, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I would have expected something like this to leak out sooner than this, don't you think? Particularly since they're going to issue it as early as tomorrow.
But that just means they need the money, right?
Yep.
They need the money. That's how. And you know, it's something else too. We talk about these record stock markets, and remember, ladies and gentlemen, they're pumping money into the repo market, so these corporations can buy back their shares.
Yeah.
So again, it isn't people are out there doing wonderfully well. They might be doing better than what they were, and I guess maybe that's all we should expect, that we're doing better than what we were. But when you look at all these other numbers, how far is your dollar taking you when you go to spend it? Does it seem like you're getting a little bit less? That you got to work a little bit harder for those dollars, and they buy a little bit less? That's the whole point of buying gold. It's to preserve your purchasing power. You know, and don't buy into the 2% inflation gauge that the Fed is looking to find. You know, they don't talk about what you need, food, energy. They don't talk about how they manipulate most of the people out there. They keep the boxes the same size. You go by your cereal box. Oh, it's the same size. I must be getting the same amount, because nobody looks at the ounces, the number of ounces. That shows how it decreased. You know, 100% cotton, it's hard to find 100%. They don't make it with 100% cotton. And everything is gotten smaller and smaller in what you purchase. And either the money stays the same, it's deceptive into making you think that you're buying the same thing. And that's what they've done. People really realized, if they truly realized the pricing and how much things have gone up, you know, maybe it'd put a little bit of reality into their future planning. And, you know, I hear it, Dave, and I hear it from, you know, my friends. Oh, we're going here and there because our stocks are doing so well. Well, one day, just like it happened to them in 2008, only this time it's going to be far worse than what we experienced in 2008, 9, and 10. But we have such short memories. And Bitcoin, I guess people have a short memory of that when it reached 20,000. And where is it today, Dave?
6,558 at some point today. It's lowest level since May. It's lost $3,000 in value in just a month. And it comes largely as China accelerated a crackdown on businesses involved in crypto operation. It's a reverse from President Xi's previous signal to be more open to blockchain technology. And one's left to wonder, is the timing of China's crackdown, does that have anything to do with their upcoming issuance of these dollar-based bonds? Bitcoin jumped to above $10,000 briefly last month, as we reported, after Xi sang the praises of blockchain and called on his country to advance development in the field. On Friday, however, China's central bank, the People's Bank of China, pledged to continue to target exchanges and asked investors to be wary, rightfully I might add, of digital currencies. Beijing has now taken a tough stance on cryptos, banning a fundraising exercise known as an initial coin offering, enforcing local trading platforms to shut down in 2017.
You know, this was one of the worst weeks in the history of digital assets. This came from a Jeff Dorman of Arca. He says the market is clearly in contraction, with no new money coming in to soak up the supply. No new money. That's what happens when you have no new money in something like a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
It drops. It's no big surprise. But we did see Bitcoin, you know, they got a boost from the markets in the summer after Facebook announced Libra, their cryptocurrency. Everybody got all positive. They attributed Bitcoin's rise due to the announcement of that. we do see Bitcoin. They do have a history of strong comebacks, but I don't know. It's nothing, ladies and gentlemen. I just, it baffles me. To me, it's like going to, you know, well, so is the paper stock market. It's like going to Las Vegas, placing your bet.
It's abstract art, Melody. just not as pretty.
Yeah. Yes. On Friday, new European Central Bank President Christine Lagarde called for a new policy mix in Europe and noted major movements in global trade and traditional economic models. Was this her first statement since she took the position?
It was her first official speech.
Ongoing trade tensions and geopolitical uncertainty are contributing to a slowdown in world trade growth, which has more than halved since last year. This has in turn depressed global growth to its lowest level since the Great Financial Crisis. We're starting to see a global shift driven mainly by emerging markets from external demand to domestic demand, from investment to consumption, and from manufacturing to services. So there are some big changes coming. And she's being optimistic, I guess.
Well, yeah, indeed. She talked about certain countries, and including the U.S., having recently shifted attention away from multilateral trade, bringing with it economic uncertainty that soured sentiment and occasionally roiling financial markets. Certainly more than occasionally, and even the sentiment has really been confusing with mixed signals. Lagarde noted, however, that the Eurozone must adapt to these new realities and boost domestic growth. She also warned it suggests that the high rates of trade growth that we're used to seeing are no longer an absolute certainty.
We know they had elections this weekend. Hong Kong's leader pledged to listen to public opinion today after a landslide election victory. He secured almost 90% of 452 district councils seats in Sunday's poll, held during a rare weekend lull in clashes with police. Hong Kong's pro-Beijing chief executive, Carrie Lam, said the government respected results and wished the peaceful, safe, and orderly situation to continue. Quite a few are the view that the results reflect people's dissatisfaction, and the government will listen to the opinions of members of the public humbly and seriously reflect. So, did she get ousted? Dave?
No, she didn't. She still enjoys the support of mainland China, but certainly some of the winners, I'm sure, are going to start to bring pressure to bear, whether it's directly to her or possibly through the pro-Beijing forces, who are typically, it's sort of geographically consistent. The supporter, the pro-China municipalities in Hong Kong are located to the north and generally abut mainland China, and the pro-democracy localities tend to be south of there. So it certainly presents an interesting challenge for Carrie Lam now, but I guess the bigger question I have is, will this result in not a slowdown in the protests, but sort of a backing off of some of the counterproductive stuff, the crap, the throwing of Molotov cocktails that just invite confrontation with the police, who are out to protect personal safety and private property? That'll be interesting. But this is a significant victory for this group that I don't think a lot of people saw coming, to the extent of the victory. So again, perhaps, I don't necessarily believe it brings the end of protests, I think. You know, this police brutality claim in particular, I think, is going to be a problem. I don't know how Carrie Lam gets to that and still maintain. I mean, I think possibly this election could result in the eventual ouster of Lam, but we'll see how people try and leverage that.
Well, you know, there was, 117 of its 1,200 members. So, I mean, that's still a pretty small stake in things, and they don't have the next vote was in 2022, so they got 2 years to, you know, see if they can make any difference or if it will make any difference. But
yeah, yep, indeed.
Officials say military accident with China is immediate risk. What's that all about?
There's this former U.S. Army Lieutenant General by the name of Carl Eikenberry. He said recently, as you know, relations between the U.S. and China continue to deteriorate on certain levels, one immediate risk that he sees is a military accident or an operational miscalculation, his words, between the armed forces of both countries. He asked, do I worry about the risks that we have with the increasing geopolitical competition with China? The answer is very much yes. Eikenberry was a former U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan. As we know, relations between the world's two large economies have soured in recent months. And despite multiple high-level trade talks, negotiations appear to have hit an impasse for a trade deal. There have also been several near-military confrontations between the two nations. The South China Sea, for example, Chinese destroyer and a U.S. Navy destroyer came within yards of one another to colliding late last year. A number of years ago, a U.S. naval aircraft actually did collide with a Chinese naval fighter and was forced to land in Hainan, which I believe is on mainland China.
Mm. I think there was another one back in the mid-90s when the U.S. had accidentally bombed the embassy, the Chinese embassy in Belgrade.
Oh,
and
Yugoslavia.
Yeah, it was during one of the wars in the Balkans. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it didn't lead to a large-scale war or anything like that, but I guess he's right. I mean, there certainly could be, now that things are... But China in 1996, even in 2001... weren't as powerful as they are today. And what's more powerful is how fast this time goes by. We're heading into our next break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today.
today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And again, you know, not sure we'll have a program on Wednesday, Dave. Most of the markets are closing. A lot of my wholesalers are closing down, so we might possibly close a little early Wednesday. But I do want to take this time just to let the listeners know how I feel that I've been blessed by being able to do what I have been doing. It's for the past almost 25 years. And I've been blessed to come across some of the most wonderful people across this country that we talk to. And it's just not about business. The friends that you make, the people that you work with. And every time I say a list of people, I always forget somebody. So I'm not going to say the list. I'm not going to say the list of people anymore because I don't want to forget anybody. But you're all included. So this Thanksgiving, just we really do have a lot to be thankful for. And I just want to thank each and every one of you. And we always run out of time at the end of the program. That's why I'm doing this now. And I just hope and wish each and every one of you a very blessed Thanksgiving Day. And
well, Melody, if I may say so, not to steal any of your thunder whatsoever, but as one of the folks on the other side, so to speak, we're thankful for you, too, for your ongoing dedication, for your compassion and concern about each and every one of your clients, your attention to detail, your frustration when something with the transaction doesn't go perfectly, and just your commitment to truth and honesty on these Monday through Friday programs. I, for one, I'm still a relative newcomer to discount gold and silver trading, going on almost a year and a half, perhaps. And gosh, how time flies. And I just want to say, in that amount of time, I listen and have seen how you treat customers, and it's no surprise that people keep coming back. And those of you who have decided to move on, whether it's to another company or another investment strategy, if you decide to come back to discount gold and silver trading, because Melody Cedarstrom is your voice. She'll watch out for you. She always has, and she always will. All right, that's enough.
Now you expect me to continue?
Well, absolutely. I mean, come on. We're segueing to the Fed printing money. It's one of your favorite topics.
Oh, it is. No kidding, Sherlock.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No kidding, Sherlock. Thank you, Dave. That was very nice. That was very, very touching. So, thank you. You know, I'm not going to say that anymore. That's my... I started that sentence out wrong. It baffles me that these people have Harvard degrees, Yale degrees, I mean, the degrees out there, yin-yangs. And the Fed economists are warning that printing money to pay for deficit spending has been a disaster for other nations that have tried it. No kidding. You needed all those degrees to figure that one out? And The Fed economists say in a paper that discusses the booming federal government debt, Fed experts surprisingly note that high debt levels are not necessarily unsustainable so long as income is rising at a faster pace. Is your income rising at a faster pace, ladies and gentlemen?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, and if it's been a disaster for other nations, what makes us better than them? Do you think we're special? Good grief.
We're following by example.
Good grief. They noted that the countries that have gotten into trouble and looked to central banks to bail them out haven't fared so well. No kidding, Sherlock. A solution some countries with high levels of unsustainable debt have tried is printing money. Just like what we're doing. In this scenario, the government borrows money by issuing bonds and then orders the central bank to buy these bonds by printing money. What do you think our central bank is doing right now? Oh, let's not call it quantitative easing or anything like that. Oh, heavens no. Let's not talk about the repo markets. Let's not talk about the billions of dollars that are being funneled into that every night just to keep it going. But everything is good because every day on television you're told that the economy is great.
Mm.
Good grief. And what's interesting, Dave, you know, they continue to talk about, you know, history has taught us, however, that this type of policy leads to extremely high rates of inflation. No kidding. Every day. It just doesn't come and go at the whim. It isn't. Prices aren't rising because things are so good, supply and demand. It's inflation. Good grief. Then they talk about Weimar. We talk about Weimar Republic on this program, Dave. Tell us a little bit more what they cite.
Well, the authors, the Fed economists, they cite Weimar-era Germany, Zimbabwe in the 2007-09 period, and Venezuela today. All three countries faced massive deficits that led to hyperinflation due to money printing. The economists added that an important protection against this type of policy is, listen to this, ladies and gentlemen, create an independent central bank that is insulated from the political process and has clear objective, such as the specific target for the inflation rate.
Good grief.
Oh, excuse me. That's me trying to avoid regurgitation. That way, they continue, the independent central bank can make policy decisions to sustain economic health over the long run rather than simply respond to political pressures. Now, the paper never specifically mentions the term modern monetary theory, or MMT, as it's becoming known as in the social media network. Though the authors do reference a paper on the movement, you know, on monetary owls, at least as opposed to hawks who are against deficits and doves who don't care as much about them. The owls, according to the authors, suggest that a government that controls a fiat money system is not constrained because it can simply create more money to pay its debts.
You know, and they just continue with this argument that, you know, everything is good as long as we can manage everything and keep everything just going and keep inflation tame. And, well, yeah, if they produce the reports, I mean, it's all a con game. That's what a fiat currency is. It's all about confidence. It's a con game, thinking that you really have some money. And then they're telling you that, yeah, we can continue to do this, no problem. We'll just create a separate bank, we did, called the Federal Reserve. As long as they have an objective, no booms, no busts, we'll keep it, we'll control it through interest rates, keep inflation tame. I mean, Dave, they think they have this all spelled out to a T, but yet they really don't have a clue, because we've been in, this is the first time we can name Zimbabwe, the Weimar, and Venezuela. But this is the, and a lot of people will think, Dave, that, oh, well, this is the United States of America. It's not going to happen to us. We're not the same as Zimbabwe. We're not the same as Venezuela. We're not the same as the Weimar Republic. Yes, we are. We just have a little bit larger group of, I don't know, countries working with us because they're all in the same boat. So, I mean, it's just, you know, it's, they think it, hey, as long as there can be, as long as they never default, as long as inflation remains tame, there really are no problems with government deficit spending, Dave. They further say that the public spending can be used to stimulate the economy, that essentially a deficit in the public sector can be a surplus in the private sector. I mean, Dave.
Melody.
What are... Maybe I just need to start smoking something.
I'm just sitting here in the other end of the microphone, just shaking my head with each passing word. It's incredible.
And it's just... It just doesn't seem to matter as long as they can continue with the BS and the illusion, the optics that everything is good, and let's just dump poor, bad money after, just pour it down the drain, because the taxpayer out there is just not swift enough to realize what's really happening.
So does the fact that the Fed's policy objectives are stimulating economic growth, bringing down long-term interest rates, and therefore seeking full employment and inflation of around 2%, does that mitigate the fact that all of its quantitative easing, in its word, has not been to finance the national debt? Or is, in fact, is that the lie? Is that the deception? That it, in fact, has been financing the national debt. And on the other end, while interest rates are low and there is some level of economic growth, that the unemployment numbers and the inflation numbers that are the crux of its policy-making decisions are a farce.
It really is. And it's... They think that it can all continue, that the deficits don't matter absent inflation. But yeah. Yet, the theory alone... When you have a fiat currency, inflation is automatically built in. Inflation is what you get. This is why we're down to, you know, that's why people lose every day by having money in the banks. They lose against inflation. The government's reports for inflation, they're just flat out lying to you. The real rate of inflation is much higher. But it all comes undone. And you know what, Dave, with the algorithms, those algorithms are written to reflect whatever the government tells them. So, to some degree, I guess they're right. But deficits do matter, ladies and gentlemen. Because you get to pay for them. It's your... And that's what baffles me. You know,
our children and grandchildren, and yeah. Get to pay for them.
Yeah. And Jeffrey Gundlach, he called this modern monetary theory a crackpot idea. And it is. And it's just that, you know, it is just amazing, Dave. And people who get it, what do? They do buy gold and silver. Because there is a day of reckoning for their recklessness. They've had it lucky. I mean, hey, they get a crack in the repo market, and look what they do. So yeah, they're going to defend their market as much as they can. And even these financial gurus, you know, they might come out and say it's dangerous, it's reckless, and all this, but they're profiting on it. But they're protecting themselves too, because they know what's going to happen. Debt will be defaulted on. It's just a matter of time. Our debt is too great to be paid. And we had a lot of things that we wanted to talk about, but we're running out of time, Dave. We wanted to talk a little bit about President Trump was pushing ahead with the drug pricing agenda. You know, violent response to Iran's increase in gas, price increase, which I find kind of interesting because we're seeing that in various countries where pricing in gasoline products is rising and this is what's starting a lot of these big demonstrations and so forth. But so, Dave.
Melody.
Are we going to do a program Wednesday?
That is a good question.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you'll just have to tune in. If we're not here, we'll have a great replay for you. I'll be here live tomorrow, Tuesday, with Pastor Butch Paul. And until then, if we're not here Wednesday, have a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving. And Dave, same to you and your family. God bless you.
And back at you, Melody.
All right. Take care. Good night. And God bless.
Bye-bye.